Blog Talk Radio.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette, and I want to welcome you to this special edition of TS Radio. Linda Kincaid will be our guest this evening. I'm running late here. We couldn't make a connection, couldn't get in, and I hope you can hear me. This is really messed up, and so I don't know who's on, who isn't on. We'll just have to play it by ear. Linda's going to be talking about several things this evening, most of it dealing with guardianship abuse, and I'm not sure. We have someone holding here. Linda, is that you? Apparently not. And I'm not even showing up on my own self's board, so I don't know what's happening. We'll wait for Linda to call in. In the interim, I'd like to remind everyone that at 9 Central tonight, Dave Hodges on the Common Sense Show will be talking about the abduction and kidnapping of children using Child Protective Services in Colorado. This is related to the same sub-courts of the state courts, the family courts, probate courts. All of this are connected. So what we have to do is kind of work together on this, and it looks like this board is going to go down. I just don't know how long we're going to be up. I'm hoping Linda will call in. but anyway, like I said, I would like to remind you all about that show with Dave Hodges, that this is very important. This has become actually an epidemic. So I don't know. Linda has emailed, she's on the phone. I don't have her on the board. So Linda, if you're listening, can you hang up and please call back in and let me see if I can get you queued up. This, everything is backwards. Thanks, Blog Talk. While we're waiting on that, we have a lot of people that are already checking into the chat room. I'm already getting emails from people about various cases across the country. I don't know how much more of an epidemic this has to be before somebody does something. I really don't know. What's it going to take? I really don't know what it's going to take to get people to stand up and put a stop to this. We have no help from our legislators, no help from our governors, no help from our state attorney generals, from no one. They all turn a deaf and blind ear, and they all know the kidnapping and abuse of the elderly is going on. So the best I can do is try to get these shows out there, get really good guests on for you. Linda has a lot of suggestions about things you can do and where you can go for help, and so hopefully can everyone hear me? I'm hoping, am I back on?
I can hear you.
Oh,
this is Linda.
Thank God. I'm telling you, this is just a nightmare. It's absolutely a nightmare.
Well, this is Linda, and we're connected finally. I could hear you, and you couldn't hear me.
Oh, you're kidding. Well, then I got bounced again, so I'm on my home phone, and we're going to do this. I don't care who likes it. So, Linda, I'm going to let you just take off and give everybody your story, what you've been doing, and we'll go from there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I got involved in the elder abuse, guardianship abuse issues in 2010 when my mom was abducted, isolated for 15 months. The good news is that my mom is now allowed to have visitors. I can actually go see my mom now. The bad news is it took $70,000 to get there, and we still have problems. My mom's not getting proper care, not getting proper medical care. I'll give a brief rundown of the history, if that's okay.
Sure.
My mom has Alzheimer's. She's had progressive dementia, as Alzheimer's brings about. And by 2010, she didn't really know where she lived. She wasn't remembering people very well. She's in end-stage dementia. So June 5th, her door is broken in. The deadlock was engaged. The door jamb, wood of the door jamb was splintered. I've got photos of that for folks who would like to see them. Mom was taken out by two financial planners who had been managing her affairs for her. June 7th, 2 days later, Mom signs a power of attorney to one of the financial planners. Then June 9th, 4 days after the abduction, a step-granddaughter closed all of my mom's bank accounts and transferred my mom's entire estate into an account that was managed by one of the financial planners that was involved in the abduction. So you're seeing things don't smell quite right here. Then
oh
on June 10th, 5 days after the abduction, my mom signs a new power of attorney, new will, new trust, all in favor of the step-granddaughter. And bear in mind, my mom has advanced dementia and doesn't even know that she has an estate, let alone has capacity to determine what should happen with that estate. Then June 19th, 2 weeks after my mom was abducted, the estate is all nicely tied up in favor of the step-granddaughter. The step-granddaughter moves my mom to Wildwood Canyon Villa, which is in Yucaipa in San Bernardino County, gave the facility instructions that my mom's not to have visitors or phone calls or mail. And Wildwood enforced that isolation for 15 months. We didn't get to visit until September 1st, 2011. Over a year later, my attorney, Steve Haney from L.A., one of the few competent attorneys, I'm convinced, got a restraining order against isolation. Now, isolation is elder abuse. Isolation is illegal. But the police, the DA, Adult Protective Services, Community Care Licensing, the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, all the agencies that you go to get help with these issues wouldn't do a thing. So family had to retain an attorney, and at the cost of $70,000 over 15 months, we got a restraining order against isolation. So the facility now had a court order that they were not allowed to isolate my mom. And as a result of that court order, I'm now allowed to go visit my mom. We still don't have decent care for her. She needs medical care she's not getting. But the big hurdle is I can at least go see my mom.
Linda,
now,
can I ask Junior, please? When you got this court order, was anybody held accountable for violating her rights?
No.
And breaking the statute? No. I didn't
no,
so.
Nothing whatsoever.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
We have a trial scheduled for the end of August. I kind of doubt it's really going to happen. If that trial actually does happen in August, my mom will have been in a temporary conservatorship for over 2 years at that point. That would be the first opportunity for any accountability to happen, and the only accountability that would happen at that point would be that the step-granddaughter would no longer be the temporary conservator. Now, if we want to pursue elder abuse litigation against the step-granddaughter in the facility, that's a separate piece of getting through the court system. We do have a litigation in the works, but that wouldn't come up for at least another year. So,
okay.
No, there's very little accountability, and if any does come about, it will be very long getting there and very expensive getting to that endpoint.
Jiminy Christmas. I can't imagine the money you've spent trying just to see your mother.
Yeah.
And yet nobody's got charges against them. Nobody's gone to jail for violating anything. Nothing.
No. Deputy DA down there, Tristan Savari, told me point blank, this is nothing out of the ordinary, which at the time I found just inconceivable. But I have since come to accept that he was telling me the truth. This is indeed nothing out of the ordinary.
Christmas.
I mean, he was telling the truth. This is nothing out of the ordinary. This happens.
Go ahead, Linda.
No, at the time I was so focused on my mom that I couldn't really see past what was happening to my mom. in the 2 years since then, I've connected with other people and I've heard very similar stories, some stories that are far worse, from people all over the country. And that's how I got involved with another case here in San Jose, close to where I live. My mom's in Southern California, about 7 hours away from where I live. There's another case I'm involved in with a lady in a facility about 10 minutes from my home in Silicon Valley, which is supposed to be very enlightened and progressive.
I think what bothers me most in all of this, Linda, is that this is happening to thousands of people. It's happening in every state. When I look at what you have done, just trying to get the right to see your mother, to visit with her, and people have gone to D.C., they have gone to their governors, they've gone to their state legislators, they have gone to the DOJ, and nothing is done. Nothing.
That's correct.
There's got to be an ulterior plan here that we're not aware of. Because these things work, they work exactly the same way in every state. The same process is at work in every state. I want to go back to something here. You said financial planners came in and took her out of her home. Wouldn't this qualify as federal kidnapping?
We went to the FBI. They wouldn't even talk to us.
Oh, for God's sake.
We went to the Department of Justice. They said no crime was committed. You know, we have done everything we can think of. We've reported to everyone to the point where I was threatened by the police. If I filed any more complaints, they said they would charge me with a crime.
What crime would that be?
He wouldn't tell me. He was screaming at me over his cell phone. But I did later get an email from his sergeant saying that anyone who tried to visit my mother would be considered committing a crime and would be arrested for trespassing. And I hear similar stories from other people around the country. And with Giselle Reardon, the case here in San Jose, she is conserved by the public guardian, which in some ways I find even more sickening. You know, my mother's abductors and abusers are individuals who hoped to benefit from her estate. And there have always been thieves who will steal money from vulnerable people, and as long as we have money as a system of the way we conduct business with each other, there will continue to be thieves who will steal money. In Giselle's case, this is a public guardian who is doing this. My tax dollars as a resident of Santa Clara County are paying the salaries for the people who are doing the very same thing to Giselle Reardon. You know, they don't have the excuse of trying to steal a little old lady's estate for their own use. I don't know why they're doing it or what they hope to get out of it other than some warped power trip. But the public guardian in Santa Clara County is locking up little old ladies, taking their estates, and not letting these people see their families. And this is the case with Giselle Reardon, who's right down the street from me. She's not allowed visitors or phone calls or mail. She's seen her son less than 2 hours in 2 years. I actually got in to see Giselle. Since she's local, I figured I would just jump in and see what I could pull off.
Right.
And I did. In April, I managed to get in to see her for 4 days. The facility just assumed I was with the public guardian's office. They didn't ask me who I was from. I didn't volunteer any information. And I did get in to see her. She does not have advanced dementia. She knows full well what's going on. She's incredibly lonely. She clutched my arm and sobbed onto my shoulder about missing her children. She begged me to come visit her again. Then on May 1st, the facility finally figured out that I was not with the public guardian's office. They ordered me off the property, told me not to come back. But I was there long enough to find out that Giselle doesn't have her dentures. She needs new eyeglasses. Her hearing aid is kept locked up at the nurse's station so that the battery doesn't run down. And,
oh, my.
Yes, and she's lost about a third of her body weight. Her son has given me photos of her showing a very sturdy, healthy-looking woman who was active world traveler, you know, very much an outdoors, going places kind of person. And when I saw her, what came to mind was Holocaust survivors. You know, her arms are bone thin, her face is sunken. You know, she's wasting away. And like I did with my mom, I filed complaints with the long-term care ombudsman, CommuniCare licensing. Licensing is still investigating. As of Friday, they were still investigating, and Giselle is still not allowed visitors.
Now, don't you find it odd, Linda, that when you want something done, it just takes a terrible amount of time, but they can do these emergency petitions and come in and kidnap her out of her home, and that doesn't take any time at all. We can do that right now.
You got it. You know, when my mom was being conserved, they got that done at light speed, and I haven't looked at the dates on Giselle's conservatorship, but I'm sure that moved quite quickly, too. When they wanted to take her from her home, they locked down the estate. They put her in this facility, then sold her house. She had a home in Santa Clara County, which we all know is fairly expensive real estate. They sold her home. They're now using her own estate to pay for keeping her locked up and away from her children. And like I said, my tax dollars are paying the salaries of the people who are doing this.
And she's financing her own captivity.
You got it.
Yeah, and that's what this is. And people need to understand this is exactly what this is, forced captivity.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you're forced to finance if you have any assets, which these people generally do. If it isn't liquid assets or material assets in the sense that Linda is speaking about her mother, where there was a home and other things involved, they milk Medicare and Medicaid, and Medicare gets bilked, according to the GAO, $5.4 billion, that's with a B, a year, just on elder abuse.
And my mom's case, if I can toss in here, my mom's been on hospice. As we know, hospice is supposed to be end of life. My mom has been on hospice since October 2010, and Medicare is paying about $5,000 a month for those hospice services, which my mom does not need because she's not terminal.
It's
a way for, it seems there's this endless supply of vultures circling overhead ready to pluck the flesh from anyone's bones who gets into this situation. And, you know,
trying to figure out, and I've asked other people, is how hospice became involved in this. Now, initially, that was a end-of-life thing where people, when they were terminal, to make sure they weren't alone, that someone visited them, if possible, if they could travel, take them on small trips out to eat something. And it was a volunteer organization. But to see this organization step into this elder abuse issue and take part in it,
it's now big business.
And they've got to be getting paid.
Oh, it's paid
by
Medicare.
They wouldn't be doing this.
You know,
once again, my tax
dollars are paying this.
Yeah.
This is paid through Medicare, which is paid through federal taxes. But I would like to visit I'm only familiar with California law. I know there are people across the country facing these situations, and I don't know the laws in all the states. I have become quite familiar with California law since I've done almost nothing except study my mom's case for the last 2 years, and then more recently applying what I've learned to Giselle's case. Under California law, conservatees have the right to visitation, and also residents of care facilities have the right to visitation. And I would assume there would be similar laws, and I think there are even federal laws that apply to these situations. In both cases, the isolation is being enforced by a residential care facility for the elderly. In my mom's case, it's Wildwood Canyon Villa in Yucaipa, California. In Giselle's case, it's Villa Fontana in San Jose, California. Both of those facilities are unlawfully isolating their residents. So when a person moves into a residential care facility for the elderly, they're given a copy of a document called Personal Rights, Residential Care Facilities for the Elderly. This is on the internet. Anybody can look it up and double check what I'm saying. Under those personal rights, number 11 is to have his, her visitors, including ombudspersons and advocacy representatives, permitted to visit privately during reasonable hours and without prior notice. So to have visitors permitted to visit privately during reasonable hours and without prior notice. This is a right under California law. Number 14 in this same document, to have reasonable access to telephones to both make and receive confidential calls. Number 15, to mail and receive unopened correspondence in a prompt manner. All three of these rights are violated in both of the cases I've mentioned, and I understand they're violated in many more cases. I know for certain they're violated for my mom and for Giselle because I've seen it happen. Then if
well, and these facilities, they have to be aware of this. I mean, it's not like they don't know.
In their lobby. In fact, when I was I was in the process of getting kicked out of Villa Fontana when they figured out that I was not with the Public Guardian's office, and the girl who was in charge that evening showed up with four guys in tow, showed up in Giselle's room, and, "You have to leave now." I was like, "Okay, I'm coming." So, but before I left, I took her to the poster in the lobby that listed the residents' rights, and I showed these rights to her. And she says, "Well, Giselle doesn't have the right to make decisions for herself." Well,
that isn't what it says.
That's not what it says. And then, of course, I got accused of creating a disturbance, and they threatened to call the police and so on. But, you know, this is what happens. But then if we go to the conservatees' rights, so before I was discussing the rights of residents and facilities. If someone moves into assisted living, these rights are posted on the wall of that facility. They're not honored, but they are posted on the wall. But now if we go to the conservatees' rights, and these apply to both cases, my mom is conserved in San Bernardino County, and she has a private temporary conservator who is her step-granddaughter who was involved in abducting her. Giselle is conserved in Santa Clara County. She's a conservatee of the Public Guardian. If we look at the Notice of Conservatees' Rights, and this is another document that's on the Internet, it is Form GC-341. It's a California court document, Notice of Conservatees' Rights. On the second page, it says, "Unless the court has limited or taken the right away, the conservatee keeps the right to receive visits from family and friends." Now, in neither case has the court taken away the right to have visits. In my mom's case, they did not take away her rights to have visits, and in fact, we had to get orders for her to have visits. In Giselle's case, the public guardian did request and obtain an order that the public guardian can manage visits with her two children. There are no orders regarding visitation with anyone from the community. So an advocate like me, one of her friends, one of her neighbors, clergy, just anyone who would happen to want to go visit her should be able to visit her provided she wants to see that person.
Right.
And that right is being violated. So from there, I go away from the legal documents. California has a handbook for conservators. And again, this is another document on the Internet. Just Google Handbook for Conservators, California, and you'll find, I think it's a couple hundred pages long. It's the instruction book for all the things that a conservator needs to know how to do and the appropriate way of doing it. And it covers a lot of material, but it does cover the right to visitation. Page 61 says, "When a person becomes a conservatee, he or she does not lose the right to visit with friends or family. Encourage the conservatee to keep in touch with family members, friends, and neighbors." And it goes on to say, "Do not isolate the conservatee by keeping friends and family away." These are all documents on the Internet. Anyone who is a conservator has to sign that they have received a copy of this handbook for conservators. There's no excuse for not knowing the contents of it.
Chapinay Christmas. Linda, we've got a caller holding on here from area code 586. Did you have a question or comment for Linda?
Hi. I'd rather not give my name because I've got some pending litigation going.
That's
fine. If that's okay.
Understand completely.
Sure.
My story is kind of unique. Years ago, in another life, I drank a lot. And I got my act together, and I became quite successful in spite of myself. And after an ugly divorce, I decided to drink again. And And I'll admit, I was a legendary alcoholic. But I was, both myself and my family were informed that my liver was gone and I needed to be placed on a liver transplant list. And the only hope to get on that was to place me in adult foster care at the age of 46.
What?
2 months after being placed in adult foster care, my liver enzymes tested completely normal, so there was no need for a medical guardianship. However, I remained in adult foster care at the age of 46, 47, 48, was told all kinds of various reasons as to why. When I had just about had enough, and I was promised that I was going to be leaving it and all that stuff, but they had tapped into a revenue stream. I've got some pretty significant nerve damage in my legs, and it has put me on disability. This guardian tapped into this revenue stream and, of course, used it to pay for the adult foster care. And after I'd exhausted all my cash assets on my own, writing my own check, to pay for this adult foster care for months on end. I remained there for 2 years, and I was given what was called an independent medical evaluation. However, the evaluation was far from independent, as the psychologist who performed it actually shared office space with the guardian.
Mm.
Okay. So, of course, and expensive as well. Paying for a report for people to say bad things about me cost a lot of money. I had had the coup de grace was when he filed for conservatorship, claiming that my home was going to be going to waste. I owned a house free and clear. So I pretty much, with the assistance of a friend, escaped and got a true independent medical evaluation by a psychologist who says, there's nothing wrong with this guy. Letters from my doctor saying, there's nothing wrong with this guy. And I fought it in court, and it took about 5 months really, before the guardianship was terminated, and the conservatorship, of course, was thrown out with the guardianship. But in the meanwhile, I don't know where a boatload of money has gone in the meantime. And like I said, there's pending litigation. But I know, I've been on both sides of the fence here. I know what it's like on the inside of the system. It's hell to get out. And I've seen horror stories and more people die than I would have thought I'd see in my lifetime. I have no fear of hell because I've been there. And I don't know if my litigation is going to be successful or not, but I feel for you, Linda, and I feel for a lot of people. And usually it's people's loved ones that are in this situation. Mine's kind of unique because I'm the person and I got out of the system, and it never should have been there in the first place. As I said, I was fairly successful. I have an estate plan. I had a durable power of attorney. I had personal representatives all handpicked and selected in the event of my death or incapacitation, and none of it was even explored.
That's what I hear from everyone. That was, you know, my mom had an estate plan. Giselle Reardon had an estate plan. I hear time and again people had estate plans. They thought they had everything in order. It's completely ignored.
So
yeah.
I feel for you, but I mean that.
Congratulations
just,
to you for getting out. You've done what not many people can do.
I mean, just the titrating from the psych drugs they had you hopped up on was nightmarish enough. They wanted to do it. My doctor wanted to do it over a period of 3 months. I said, nope, I've only got 14 days. So I pretty much quit all these psych drugs that zombify you cold turkey.
Wow.
And then in the middle of the night, I was gone. And it was an exciting escape. It was real Hogan's Hero stuff. But
that's a huge thunderstorm here, people.
I'm very sympathetic to the topic of guardian abuse. I do belong to an association that, a group of people that share their stories and stuff like that. They've been very helpful to me. And Linda, I've seen some of your blurbs come over the wire, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. We've got other callers backed up here, and one in particular I really need to get to, and that's Carrie. Carrie, are you with us?
I sure am.
Sorry about the delay. We had another caller that was explaining an ordeal he went with.
It's a pleasure to be here. Marty, how are you, Marty?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. I'm a fan. I've been a big fan of yours. I've sent you a few friend requests on Facebook, and maybe I'll try again one of these days.
There.
But it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah,
and,
I'm not on. I tried it, and in a week I had over 1,000 Be My Friend things, and it was just too much for me, and I bailed.
Okay,
and,
well, I was only 999, so, I mean, I don't know what the problem was. But anyway, it's great to be here.
Good.
And especially the focus here in Santa Clara County. I understand that the folks are involved here with both ABC News, IKEAM, and also NBC, Universal Studios, which is fantastic. There's a lot. I mean, there's plenty to go around, and the situation here in Santa Clara County is insane. I'm very familiar with it. Unfortunately, I've been through the system. I know the battle, and the corruption in this county is so real and intense that until someone is caught in the middle of it, they don't see it. But for us, it was as if we were trying to speak out against what was happening to us. It was as if a gigantic sledgehammer came down and just tried to destroy us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing how coordinated the system is. I mean, the different parts of the system that coordinate together. I mean, even with the county utilizing the San Jose Police Department, officers Gabriel Quinca and Tom Portorici of the San Jose Police Department, two other officers orchestrated a home invasion robbery, literally, with the county in 2006, because they believed we had evidence that we against a conservator. It wasn't. We did have evidence. We didn't specify what it was, where it was, so they just came in and took everything. Except for, a few cages of clothes, the conservatee, and just took everything loaded into a truck and took off. And that was pretty scary to go through, and it was changed my world around as far as my perspective of the government. My government, which is supposed to be controlled by me, a citizen by the people for the people, and here the San Jose Police Department was acting to protect a county official who, with her cronies, had committed to what I believe over 25 felonies, probably close to 30 felonies, and I had done nothing. And I was portrayed as the instigator and told that if I spoke about it, I would go to prison. The conservative was told that if she spoke about it, then nobody would believe her and she was crazy and they'd be forced to put her on medication and put her in a boarding care home. And if I had told her that the stuff that she just went through was real, then I'd be manipulating her and that would be, elder abuse, of course. And for them to be able to commit 25, 30 felonies and to just walk away and laugh about it as if it's a big joke and not even care about it. And here I am, they threaten a restraining order against me if I leave a coffee stain on the counter. And they can't even prove it's my coffee stain. So what happened to our 14th Amendment right to equal protection under the law? Yeah.
Well, I don't think any of us, one of the things that's come across loud and clear on many of the shows I do, no matter what happens, don't call the police. The people that have that attitude now, they're more fearful of what we jokingly call law enforcement, has become epidemic. People are terrified of them. And what you're speaking about here is exactly that, Carrie, is the idea that these people use their office to not only violate your rights, but to break the law, and they walk away with no penalty. They even if you expose them, even if you have the evidence of what they did, nothing happens. The most that will happen to a policeman is he might get a paid suspension.
Right.
Gee whiz, that sounds like a paid vacation to me. But go ahead.
It's pretty much there's a public guardian's office in the probate court. They're cronies that work together. They got the DA's office, and they coordinate amongst each other. You know, I'm not sure how much the public defender's office does or doesn't, but I'm getting a little bit suspicious to that effect also. But it's like they're surrounded by a force field. They've got the police department, who's sworn to protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Well, here's the public guardian's office of domestic enemies, who they're defending. So, I mean,
well, the thing is, Gary, they since 2007, all law enforcement except your duly elected sheriff is under Homeland Security. And according to a sheriff's deputy right here that I spoke to, because I noted that to protect and serve no longer appears on the side of any police car, sheriff car, anything. Doesn't say that.
Really?
Anymore. That was paid for by Homeland Security, had that taken off. When I said to him, why doesn't that car say to protect and serve anymore? He said, because our mandate has changed. He said, our mandate is no longer to protect you. It's to protect the government from you. And I said, do you realize what you just said? He said, yes, ma'am. I said, who are you working for? He said, I work for Homeland Security.
No kidding. Except for county sheriffs.
Yeah, except for the county sheriffs. And they are elected, and because of that, and now, of course, there's a big movement on to end the office of sheriff. But
That's some scary.
Yeah,
and
they basically, they have military authority is what they've done. And yeah, so this is what you're dealing with, and this is, like I say, so many people now are saying, you know, the last person I would call is the police. They're not there to help you.
They still have their policy and procedure, though, and it's a complicated maneuver. It's almost like an obstacle course that, you know, if you know the procedure in advance, you call in advance, you know who the chain of command is, who the supervisors are, sergeant, lieutenant, get, you know, all the way up to the top, get all that information in advance, request a case number, tell them in advance what it's about, have someone there with video. I mean, you shouldn't have to go through all this.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there's ways to hold them to their policy and to make them, you know, do what they're supposed to do. But it's a very, very tricky maneuver. If they don't, I mean, you don't only have the internal affairs process, which is, to a sense, it's a joke at the local level. But when it gets to the county level, I mean, there's always a pitcher's motion and all kinds of things that can work. So it does have its good points, too. But one of our advantages are, as citizens, which is a disadvantage to them, is that this procedure, they're bound to the procedure, not us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're bound to the law, but they're bound to the law and the procedure. So we can, you know, hold them to their procedure, and we can work around it and do whatever, and we can take that complaint, which would normally be private, and, you know, make a public record, follow up on it, you know, in all kinds of manners, to where it's hard for them to not follow through.
Right.
If you know, it's like an obstacle course. You have to have the map to it first. You don't just try to jump into it blindly and just map it out first and then make the phone call.
Well, and the thing is, it's one thing doing these things, and it's another. But see, what they dislike most of all is being exposed. It's
right.
Like the problem isn't that they committed a felony or a crime against you, or they didn't follow procedure, or, you know, whatever. That isn't the problem. The problem is you told.
Yeah,
and
Sherry,
right.
If I can jump in here, I think there was a name
sure.
that you wanted to mention. A particular deputy public guardian that we both dealt with? Rebecca Pisano-Torres.
Rebecca Pisano-Torres?
That's the name I'm talking about. She's on my list, too.
Right, yeah, she's, yeah, we've, yeah, we're, that's, yeah, I know Rebecca.
Yeah, have you found your interactions with her to be satisfactory?
To give her some credit, she's at least tried to be unbiased. If you're, I don't know if she's, she could have done better for the last couple of months, and no disrespect to her. It seems like she's been trying to build a case against me, much like some of the other conservatives have done in the past. She's been less blatant, a lot more subtle about it. Than Rondi Oppheim or some of the, you know, her predecessors, but you have to wonder sometimes, you know, I mean, you like to believe in somebody, and sometimes, you know, you just see the red flags and you just can't ignore them out of blind faith.
Yes, when I met her, I was asking her if I could visit Gisele Reardon, and she told me flat out that she has the authority to deny visitation.
I believe in the probate code. It will say something specifically to where, I forget what section of the probate code, I've seen it, that they can only do what's necessary. I know, at least in the welfare and institutions code, somewhere around 15670, somewhere around there in that vicinity, it'll mention, you know, isolation being, you know, part of a crime.
Got it right here in front of me. You're talking about Welfare and Institutions Code 15610.07, abuse of an elder or dependent
right.
adult.
Can you read it?
And it's the definition of abuse of an elder or dependent adult, and the definition is physical abuse, neglect, financial abuse, abandonment, isolation, abduction or other treatment with resulting physical harm or pain or mental suffering. I think we could say the victims of these attacks by the public guardian most certainly result in mental suffering. And in my case, I've seen abduction and isolation.
I was going to say,
yeah,
you're hitting on about
I
all cylinders there.
Yeah, pretty much all of those could apply.
Yes. And that would also apply under Title 18, Section 242 of the U.S. Code. That's deprivation of rights under color of authority. If someone is using their authority to deprive anybody of their constitutional rights or any laws.
And that's when you file a constitutional tort
right,
for interference
exactly.
with your rights. That's one of the things, that Linda, Perry, both of you, that has escaped me in all of this. The tort process is available, and yet no one has exercised it, and I think primarily because you won't find an attorney anywhere that will file one for you. And filing tort is rather complicated, but the
yeah.
remedy is right there in their own contract law, U.S. Code and Title. The remedy is right there. There again, you're denied access to it because nobody's going to represent you. Nobody, and if they do, they're going to want tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to put together a $5 case. They keep you out of the system one way or the other, either
yeah.
financially or just a refusal to follow the law.
Yeah, I do think
I've
finally found a competent attorney, and we're at $200,000 in litigation trying to get my mom out of this mess.
Chimney.
I know, it's nuts. It's nuts.
It's just sick.
Sometimes, yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, these laws are there for whatever they're worth. Pennies on the dollar. I mean, we gotta and apply what we can because we're facing a vicious beast here, you know, in county government, and it's just insane. And I really hope that this radio show tonight will bring a lot of heat and attention down on Santa Clara County, up on the Board of Supervisors, Dave Cortese, Liz Niss, Jeff Rosen, the DA, all of the above powers that be. I hope that someone comes down on them and does something, and I hope that all the people that hear this show will take a link and send it off to any media resource, church, religious organization, organization.
And that's something that needs to happen. We continue to work within this small hub of people. We have got to send this stuff out. Whether people look at it or respond to it or not, I really don't care, and you'll never know how many actually did. But we've got to start, like, I can make an MP3 out of this broadcast, send you the link. You can send it out to everybody. Send it to your legislators. Let them hear this story if they'll listen to it. You know, one of our chatters in the chat room, and by the way, folks, I can't type a thing in there for some reason. It says I'm not logged in. but one of them mentioned regarding filing a constitutional tort that not only will it cost money, but then the other side will bill fees from the abused elder's estate to defend against the tort. So there again, you're just stuck either way. They're going to get you either way.
That's correct.
The only thing I can see that can be done is just massive exposure.
Isn't there anything like maybe within the Code of Civil Procedure that can, I guess that would be another solution that they could bypass, I guess, huh? They have everything all the mechanisms.
Yeah, one thing I do know that I'm looking into is what's called cold pleadings. And this has everything has to be absolutely perfect in a code pleading, but you plead through the code for redress. And so this is something I've been studying on. I don't know a lot about just yet, but I'll get up to speed on it. I got about 3 more law books to go through. But
is that anything like FIJA?
Pardon?
Have you heard of FIJA? Fair Jury Association or something like that? Where the jury can judge the law?
There's other organizations, too, but it's like we had Clear the Bench Colorado on, which is dealing with getting rid of most of their Superior Court judges, and they have been successful to some degree, and several of their state-level judges. When I approached them about the problem in probate, they said, well, they were aware of it, but they weren't doing anything. For some reason, nobody wants to go anywhere near this. And
right.
Even these, like even Judicial Watch, really has no interest in investigating this or exposing it. I don't understand why they don't.
I think to a large degree, it's seen as an old person's problem. You know, these are old people, they've lived their lives, and young kids don't really think about it. But once you face this, you realize it could be anybody. It could be anyone's mom or dad. And the way Richard and I are looking at it is if we don't fix this, we're next on the conveyor belt. We need to fix this before
exactly.
We get much older, or it's going to be us next.
Yes.
That's a very
relevant point, Linda. It is next. You know, you're the next one in line.
Exactly.
Your generation.
Not too many people are really prepared to fend it off if it happens to them. I mean, it's almost like somebody puts a tag on you that you can contest, and you have to know how to contest getting that tag off you. Otherwise, you belong to them, and you essentially, and people will ridicule the statement, but I mean, you essentially become a slave.
You really can't contest it. The section of the California probate code that was sent to me by one of the folks at NASGA. Let's see, I'm looking. The public guardian or public, this is, if the public guardian or public conservator intends to apply for appointment as conservator, we're not talking about they've already done it, where they've taken you to court and they've got you conserved. This is, they just intend. So let's say, Carrie, they've decided they didn't like you leaving a coffee spot on the counter, and they've decided that indicates that you need to be conserved. So they decided the public guardian or public conservator intends to apply for appointment, public guardian or public conservator may take possession or control of real or personal property of a person domiciled in the county. That means they can lock down your bank accounts, they can take control of your assets, they can take control of your home, and tell me how you're going to launch a legal defense when you don't have access to your bank account, your credit card, you're kicked out of your home is sold, you don't have the money. There's no way you can fight it.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, you are turned into chattel property. And
I mean, you can
you are owned, and I've told people many times, say one of these elderly individuals that's under one of these predatory guardianships escapes, you know, walks away from one of these facilities that's holding them hostage, and this is a hostage situation. But suppose they get away. They go to the sheriff's department and have a warrant sworn out for escaped human property. Because as a ward of the... Pardon?
Is that a real label, or is...
Yes, that's what the warrant is issued for, escaped human property. And then the name of the escaped property is listed. Because once you become a ward of the state, whether as a child or disabled or, you know, an elder in these hostage situations, you lose all your rights. You are a ward of the state, and you are dead in the law. You
I mean,
do
now,
don't
you
know.
Said that in one of your shows, Marty. I think it was the first or second show, and it
yep.
stuck to me.
Yep. And it, so,
so I guess
when,
it's time for us to build the Underground Railroad and start getting the word.
Yes.
Yeah,
after
my mom was locked up, you know, I was going to the police and saying that she was kidnapped. She's being held prisoner. And
yes.
they laughed at me and said, she's free to leave anytime she wants. Well, what's she going to do? They took away her address book. They took away her cell phone. They took away all of her money. She has no credit cards. She has no car. She can't
that's
even call
they,
a cab.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, what's she going to do? That's, go stand out by the curb and stick her thumb out and hope somebody gives her a ride somewhere? That was all
well,
she
had left
for.
Well, furthermore, those places are locked down. When could she walk out?
At this point, she is in a locked area. There is no way she could get out. Giselle Reardon is also in a locked area.
I mean,
we have
you know,
we
they
have
can't
a,
even make phone calls.
Yeah, we have a nursing facility right here where I live in this small little burg. It's quite different, I would suggest, than most places because you can come and go from there whenever you want to. But once you are on the inside, when you go to leave, you have to have a nurse buzz the door to let you out.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to keep these people from walking out because some of them do have Alzheimer's and dementia and things like that. But as far as getting entrance, you can walk in and out of there anytime you want to. And this thing of locking these things down and refusing people, visitors, up here they're begging for people to come visit. You know, they want the family there. They want the kids there, the grandkids there. They want them to come. They have all sorts of events to bring the families in. And so this whole...
And people on the inside that nobody cares about them and they hate them. And then whatever little strength or hope they have, I mean, that just gets drained out of them and they just want to die.
Well, that's
and
right.
That's
well, with my mom, you know, she was isolated for over a year, and when we did get back in to see her, she was practically a vegetable. You know, initially, she didn't really move, she didn't talk, she didn't react. Now that she's been able to have visitors for a while, you know, you're always told that dementia is progressive, it only gets worse. Well, my mom has
right.
improved dramatically now that she's allowed to have visitors. You know, she smiles,
right.
she talks, she starts conversations. Now, they may not be conversations about anything that happened in the last 20 years. She has regressed due to her dementia, but she tells me stories. She talks about what happened on the farm. She's clearly happy to see visitors, and that's a result of her being stimulated again.
Do you have Giselle Reardon's address where she's being held captive?
Oh, Giselle Reardon? She is at
yes.
Villa Fontana. The address is 5555 Prospect Road in San Jose. Zip is 95129, and their phone
okay.
number.
I think we should all send her postcards.
She won't get them
and
though.
Say, well, then we can complain to the U.S. Postal Inspector and follow up, and any other organization follow up on the chain of command. You know, ask for a case number. Go to the Inspector General's office. Every federal agency will have an Inspector General's office. I'm not saying it's. I mean, if a whole bunch of people do it. then go to the Council of Inspector Generals, make big postcards. I mean, nail them to trees outside the house. Section Title 10 of the San Jose Municipal Code, 1021-40, will have an exemption listed in this trespassing ordinance. I don't understand exactly how it works, and I've only tested it a little bit when I had to, where if you're there on a First Amendment-related issue, then you're not trespassing. I think everybody who hears this radio show should maybe go there tomorrow. They're not going to let them into the building. You're not trespassing according to the San Jose Municipal Code. I believe Penal Code 602 will say the same thing. And you shout, Gisela, we love you. We're here for you. Use megaphones. You shout, you know, that you're here. That's what I would do, and just keep it up for a few days. It's also got you've got extra protection for religious freedom. Bring the churches down there, hold vigils.
And for the folks who aren't local, let me put the phone number in here. If folks across the country want to make a phone call to San Jose, the phone number for Villa Fontana is 408-255-5555. And if you call up and ask if you can talk to Gisela Reardon, they will tell you no.
And I got a suggestion to add to that. If you've got three-way calling, put a law enforcement official on the line, ask them to document it. Ask them to record the conversation, get a case number. Request for follow-up, ask for the person's name who took the call, their supervisor, everyone up the chain of command to the chief of police.
Oh, that's it. Yeah,
and I mean, they're bound to their procedure. Okay, we are not bound to it. That's their procedure, not ours. Okay, so they're stuck with it. And you know, we can do what we need to do. We've got the California Public Records Act. It's another advantage we have. I mean, if they come to us, the police come to us wanting answers, wanting, you know, we don't have to speak to them. Okay, they are obligated to. I mean, they don't have their Fourth Amendment and Fifth Amendment. Right, the government does not have that. We do. Do a California Public Records Act request for who the supervisors are, all the way up the chain of command to the chief of police. Get the policies and procedures regarding whatever the issue is you're dealing with. Make sure they're following it. Therefore, they can't pass the buck. They're stuck with the buck. So
I like that.
The trick is with the county agencies and the federal, I mean, everybody, I mean, the police, they like to, you know, all send you to the probate court, send you here, send you all over the place. When they refuse to document things, when you can document that, they refuse to document things. You know, like videotape them, record them, refusing to document something. Okay, then they try to pass the buck, and then they turn around and it's stuck to their fingers. So these force fields are pretty, you know, when you find out how to manipulate these force fields that they have set up to protect these the ones in power, then you can weaken them. You can, you know, do all kinds of things, and that can lead to
citizen's arrest. Tory Guardian and you did a citizen's arrest and brought them in on kidnapping charges and violation of these statutes and codes and, you know, charge them even if they're misdemeanors. I've been seeing this working quite well where these illegal immigration protests where people are, American citizens, are performing citizens' arrests, and the police have to accept it. If you do that, they have to accept it. And they've been put in a box there because they don't want to arrest these people. They want the protests to go on, and yet they are forced to take these people in and charge them. So why couldn't we do that with some of these conservators? I think even if you went after one of these judges.
Right. Another good idea is law enforcement agents are mandated reporters, as are ministers, all kinds of people. That'll be under 15656, I believe, of the Welfare and Institutions Code, to where they're sitting here in the court as bailiffs and watching all this happen all day long and just sitting there yawning and whatever. I mean, they're what happened to their mandated reporter rights? What's overriding that?
Is it some sort of contempt of court law or whatever?
No,
there are so many people who should have reported on my mom's case and they didn't. Not one of them.
I know. It's ridiculous, and they're going to laugh at you. But I mean, there's ways to follow up on them. I mean, do a Public Records Act request, find out who all the bailiffs are who work there, all the way up to their supervisor, who's, you know, the courts, and go there with a bunch of people, demand to file a police report. That doesn't mean they'll follow up on it, but it means just start somewhere, and you'll start to these mechanisms that are just asleep because they aren't active. And I mean, if people will test them and put, you know, and put strain on these, you know, on these forces, you know, the procedures and policies that, you know, put some sort of strain on and pressure on them, get a copy of the policy, hold it in their face, say, here's the policy, here's the paper, you know, what's your badge number, I want to file a report, get it on video, even though you can't bring up a video camera into the courtroom, I mean, figure something out. You got the court cameras, which should be, I'm not a lawyer, I mean, unless you, you know, Murphy's Law, maybe, but I mean, the cameras in the court should be discoverable.
Kerry, there is not a courtroom in this country since 9/11 that does not have a video running in it 24/7. There is not a court that is brought into session in this country that is not being videotaped. And
wonderful.
So they come to you and say, oh, well, we didn't make one. Well, we don't do one. Yes, they do. They are required to make a video transcript of the proceedings of that court for that day. Every one of these judges is on a film somewhere breaking the law, violating rights. Every one of these attorneys that has payrolled himself by motioning into these cases is on file on that tape doing that very thing. The evidence is there. And I've seen where people have requested copies of the court video for that day and were told it would cost them $10,000. It doesn't cost you anything. If you ask for a video transcript of the proceedings from that courtroom, you are supposed to get one as a citizen of this country.
Wonderful.
And there is not, I mean, I've told people, you watch on TV and they'll show, they've got one of those idiotic shows on TV about, you know, what goes on in courtrooms. Where do you think all that tape comes from? Showing these prisoners going berserk or fights breaking out and all. It's because there is not a courtroom in this country that does not have a videotape running. And the evidence of misfeasance, malfeasance, of abrogation of rights, of violation of civil rights, of absolute harm and clear intent to harm is not evident on those tapes by the very people that are supposed to be protecting that vulnerable person. And I'm telling you, and another thing, too, they cannot stop you from bringing a video camera into that courtroom.
I believe it may be in California under contempt of court laws. I looked that up. And then the contempt of court laws are pretty vague, and it usually falls under the rules of the court. It's not under any, that's where you'll find it, I think, under the, you know, the rules of the court. And
yeah, and the courts I've been
in
around here, you can't take in any recording device.
Right. Without prior approval from a judge, if you've got some sort of press card or something, and I know there's some states that allow it, some states that don't. I think that it's a major oversight problem right there. I mean, especially with the probate courts and family courts, but I mean, yeah, it should be able to be. I mean, there's got to be some way to override that First Amendment, or something. I mean, it's a public building, isn't it? I mean, whose quarters is it? You know.
I got
so,
bounced
I mean,
out
it's
there.
It's not a military base. You know, I mean,
I have no idea what happened. There's got to be. You know, there another thing we could possibly consider trying is what if. A bunch of us in the area you're at where someone is being held hostage like this, Okay, so you can't step on the property of the facility they're being held hostage in, but why can't you stand across the street holding up big signs that say, my mother, my father, my sister, my brother, whomever, is being held hostage. I am not allowed to visit. I am
That's
not allowed
really
a phone call. She is being isolated, medicated against their will. We need
no
help.
No further than that. They can contact the neighbors. Okay, contact the neighborhood association. Are there any churches there? I mean, schools? I mean...
There's a church catty corner across the street that wants to send visitors to see her. They're not allowed in.
Yes, they are.
Wow.
According to the, I mean, okay, they can't prohibit her from religion. Not that anybody can choose her religion for her. But as far as trespassing is concerned, that's an exemption under 10-21-40 of the San Jose Municipal Code. I'm not sure the
subsection. The problem, though, is that the facility is called the police, and they file a trespassing complaint, and the police will honor that complaint. Giselle's son was arrested for trying to visit. I was threatened with arrest for trying to visit my mother.
Print up a copy of the law. Bring a bunch of people with you. Some of them on the property, some of them off the property, beside the property. Bring video cameras. Bring big signs, and see them squirm. Say,
call the local TV and radio stations before you go. And then if they don't show up the next time you do it, put a big sign out there that says, we contacted this radio station, this TV station. They didn't think this was worth reporting on. And see how they like that. We have another caller on, Linda and Carrie, from area code 720. Did you have a question or comment?
I actually have relocated from California, and I agree with everything that you're saying. We should have the rights that you're saying. But unfortunately, that's not what is happening today. Okay, you can write in to get your transcripts from a court, but generally it will take you many, many months to obtain them. And by then you're so inundated with all the other things that comes up, that they bring up, that you never get those records. What they do is they use, threats of different types of, you know, not direct threats, but, you know, I don't know how to explain it. It's something that's just really happening in Santa Clara County in just every level. I know of two cases that the parents have been, elderly people have been taken, their property has been seized. Their families can't see them. You know, they come in and they're slapped with restraining orders, not being able to see their own family. What kind of rules is that? That would be my question.
Well,
how are they
implementing themselves?
It?
I mean, what would happen if, say, you know, 200-500 people showed up in front of your governor's office demanding that he intervene? What would happen if you went to your legislator's office, as many of you as you can get together, and demanded time that he intervene? And they can. They'll tell you, the only thing we do is make laws. We don't enforce them. They do way more than that. And they do it on a regular basis. So, I mean, there's many things. I think the time for passive resistance is over. We've tried everything. We've tried every legal avenue. We have tried every possible way to keep this from becoming a volatile situation. But the more people that are kidnapped, the more people that are held hostage, the more estates that are robbed, I think the time for passive resistance is over. We're going to have to become very aggressive.
I agree with you. I think that it would be best for the public, for anybody that is involved in any type of situation like this, to contact your government, to write emails, write letters, write postcards. Unfortunately, the people that are captive at this point will not receive those postcards or what have you. But we can sure send them to the governors, to the district attorneys, and let them know we're not going to put up with this anymore.
Well, and these people that have done this, like these conservators, this is a public office. These public conservatives, public office. So anybody that's in a public capacity, what we're talking about here is malfeasance. And malfeasance is taking actions under the color of law, and many times even what is a fiction of law, to harm the very people you are supposed to be defending and protecting and working for. And I think this is a clear case of malfeasance. And go ahead.
I think people need to show some passive aggressiveness tomorrow. Print up the copy of the San Jose Municipal Code 1020-140 instead of just showing up, okay? Call the San Jose Police Department, request a civil standby that they enforce the rights that you have to initiate contact with or at least try to.
Well, we have
what
a
is,
great
what
opportunity
to explain civil standby.
Bring lots of people, you're having a civil standby to make sure that the whoever runs this nursing home or boarding care or whatever, that they do not infringe upon your First Amendment rights, which are guaranteed under that law.
Well, I've also been going to the board of supervisors.
Go there with cameras, bring a copy of the law, bring megaphones, bring people, bring cameras, and just stand at all different angles. You got a problem with that officer request, he's obligated to identify himself and bring a supervisor. He's going to bring a sergeant if you ask for it. The sergeant has to bring a lieutenant. Lieutenant has to bring a captain. Captain has to bring a deputy chief, all the way up the chain of command. Somewhere it's got to break. And when you've got dozens of people out there with megaphones and cameras telling it's going to happen, and even if you can't initiate contact, you're going to embarrass the, shame the San Jose Police Department, and therefore you can use that as pressure to force them to revise their policies and also use that as leverage to demonstrate to the world the evil that's happening within this county.
Something that's been very easy to do, Richard and I have been going to the Board of Supervisors meetings, which are generally just every other Tuesday. But this coming week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the Board of Supervisors will be meeting every afternoon for budget discussions. And at the beginning of each meeting, there's an opportunity for public comment. So the next 4 days, we have opportunities for public comment. You show up a few minutes early, fill out a card saying that you want to speak, and you get 2 minutes to speak on whatever you want to talk about. And anyone can come in, anyone can speak. It's videotaped and it's archived, so anyone can go onto the Internet and look at it later. This puts it on the record. The Board of Supervisors cannot claim they don't know because we have a record
Fantastic.
Of it being presented to them. And that's tomorrow and the next 3 days.
Another thing, that's fantastic. I think before the show is over, to please, everybody do this at your own risk and be aware of what you're doing when you go there. But like, get a copy of the law, get the address, and just go down there with cameras and megaphones and signs and tell Marker's mom that you're there for her.
Well, and that's
I think that they should write in as well. It would not hurt to, some of us are not within your state anymore, but some of us are still. We're watching. We see what's going on, and we do want it to change because this is not just happening there. It's happening everywhere, and it needs to be changed. There needs to be internal investigations because this is obviously several cases that are legitimate cases that need to be looked
at. Another thing, when they don't document it, there's a special privacy law to protect any complaints against police, which are blocked. But the evidence code, I think it's 1043 to 1047, the Pictus motion, if you get to court under certain circumstances, that's discoverable because it's evidence that it is to your defense, pursuant to Brady versus Maryland, I guess. So instead of just filing a complaint, make it public, get all the records first, because once you file a complaint, it's not public record anymore. Get it all out so that you have all the cards, not them. Make a public record, bring it right to the public defender's office, put it up on the net somewhere to where they can't, even if they cheat on the investigation, that they can't deny that the complaint happened.
They
have to keep that for 5 years. And that's a very easy thing for them to bury unless you, make a public record somehow. A complaint is private. It's sealed information. A compliment, a commendation is not. So if you write a commendation on the officer, I mean, that's not the commendation part is a policy procedure thing. It's not pursuant to law. But if you write as far as most police departments I know of, a compliment or a commendation is public record, and it stays in the file forever because it makes the officer look good. So file a complaint, then write a commendation talking about what a wonderful job the officer did at depriving you of your rights and how they worked so well as a team together and coordinating together to do this or whatever that was illegal. Cross-reference the commendation to the complaint. I mean, it's not no work of magic or anything, but it definitely scrambles them up a little bit in their own policy.
Yeah, and I especially like speaking at public meetings because those are videotaped and archived. That becomes public record, and it's so very easy to do, and frequently the press is there to hear about it too.
That's good. That's good. We've got to become more aggressive, and that means maybe putting yourself out there a little bit. Even if you are a little bit afraid, just stop and think about the fear that your parent or your relative or whomever it is experiencing at the hands of these people. And so step outside your own fear and step up is the best thing I can tell you. The days of trying to handle this civilly, trying to handle this quietly are over. We look at the case of Gary and Sarah Harvey out there in New York, Sarah, of course, having launched a monumental battle trying to save her husband from this corruption. And I hear these stories all over the country, like stories of people literally being held hostage, starved to death, medicated to death, suddenly and conveniently dying when the last dollar is drained from the estate. They just drop over dead an hour or two later. I don't know how much handier that could get. And yet nobody seems to think there's anything funny going on there. So the things that have been brought up, Linda, I think this idea of going to these public venues, speaking, even if you do only get 2 minutes, that's 2 minutes that these people didn't have before. And now these public officials cannot say they did not know, they weren't told, nobody told them. They were never advised.
Exactly, and if 10 of us show up, that's 20 minutes on the record.
You betcha. You
Wonderful.
Betcha.
And if you can't
they
be
have
there,
to listen,
well,
so get
everybody...
up and go. Something Bev and Ken Cooper brought up when I had them on here several months back, they're in Chicago, and there's a couple of dynamos there. But if you've got cable, you've got a cable access, they have got to give you time on their public service. They've got to give you time. You have to arrange with them. You make your own taping, or they will even make their studios available to you. They have to. But they will give you public. Do a public access show, even if you only do it once a month.
That's
do it for an hour.
Idea.
And get out.
We're doing what they hate right now. The reason why it's so exhilarating for me to speak right now is because those officers Quinca and Tortorici threatened me to not speak or I go to prison. Here I am, I'm speaking, and it feels so good to know that I'm speaking to I mean, this was sent out all over the world to just about every country, and it's being monitored by some major networks right now, probably some we're not aware of, and it's just going to keep on going out there that these officers, I mean, they thought that I'd just disappear like that while I'm still here and I'm never going to go anywhere, and that all the pain and suffering and misery and everything that you've destroyed, Rondi Oakheim, Conte Grindal, San Jose PD, these officers, everything that they've done, I will never heal from that. We'll never get it back. We're going to suffer from it forever with the scars that we suffered, but I'm going to keep on going until every last drop of suffering has some sort of meaning to it.
And there's a lot of other people that are going to back him up, that are going to keep watching. We want this change. We don't want our older people imprisoned.
So
the thing is, here they're... screaming about, you know, people not saving and not planning for the retirement. The people that they're targeting and doing this to did save. They did plan.
Exactly.
They had built an estate. They had most of these people were depression babies. They came out of that. They lived frugally. They lived below their means. They saved. And they paid for their property. And to me, this is one of the biggest transfers of wealth away from the private citizen to other private citizens who are quickly moving it offshore or investing somebody else's money in a new estate for themselves. And the only thing I can say to that is, I hope to God, if there is a God up there, I hope that every one of you that has persecuted, prosecuted, kidnapped, held hostage, medicated to death, starved to death, abused any of these elder people, that you endure it yourself and that you live a long life. I want you to live to be 110. I want you to be aware of what's going on. I want you to suffer, and that's the truth.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So
I just
hearing him speaking feels good, and you know what? Maybe that's the purpose of what happened to me, because now it has meaning, and now maybe someone out there will take this message and carry it on to someone else who can get value from it. So now maybe my pain and my loss has some value finally, and it's gonna, you know, appreciate and value, and nobody can steal it away.
That's kind of
I hope other people surface now and start telling their story. This needs to come out. There's other people out there that are suffering from this as well. And they need to step up now and not be scared. We're here. We're behind them. You're there. And I appreciate what all three of you are doing. Other people need to be not afraid anymore. You can call in anonymously and you can talk. You can tell your story. They need to speak up.
Well,
now.
We've done many of these shows, and we're probably, from the looks of it, doing a whole lot more. We've got, according to Blog Talk, 2 minutes and 20 seconds left here. I hate these people. What I would like to do is, if it's possible, would you be available again next Wednesday night?
I'm here. If you can't show up at the Board of Supervisors, email them.
Marty, you asked a question and I couldn't hear what you asked.
I asked if you would be available next Sunday night.
Absolutely.
Let's pick this back up.
Okay.
Hopefully I'll have everything straightened out here. I'm just at a loss for what happened this evening. I went to sign in and I got nothing, absolutely nothing. And I see a lot of people.
I tried to sign in and it wouldn't let me in either.
Yeah,
hey,
for all the delays, but I want to pick this up, Linda, because I think we're on something here, and what I'd like to do next Sunday night is come out with a plan, some kind of plan, something firm and a list. Like I say, we've got to quit this passive resistance. We've got to become far more aggressive, and we have got to pull everyone together that we can. And for anybody listening that might want to become involved in doing that, if you've got problems with being the top dog and running everything, and if it's not your way, stay away. I don't want to deal with it.
Right.
We've got just about 60 seconds, so we will be back next Sunday night, same time. Hopefully I'll have audio again with Linda, and we'll get this set up and let everybody know. Carrie, thank you so much for calling in, and hopefully
you
can join us next Sunday evening also. For all of our callers, thank you so much. Everybody in the chat room, there were a ton of you. I'm sorry I couldn't chat with you this evening. But maybe you were happy about that. But anyway, we'll all
everybody
be back next Sunday night. So please
email us,
join
us.
Thank you.
Email them, call them, write them.
Yes.
Thank you,
all
Marty.
Right. We'll talk to everybody next week. You all have a good week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so
much.
Thank you, Linda. Good night.
Good night.